One was wondering, what is the longest parsha, the most amount of sentences in any Torah reading? The answer is Parshas Naso. Our parsha, which had in it 176 psukim, clearly the most amount of sentences found in a single parsha. But the main reason why our parsha is so long is due to the repetition in the very end of our parsha. We find paragraph after paragraph with almost the exact same words. The very end of our parsha discussed the offerings of the tribal leaders, that the Nesiim, these leaders of each of the Shlatim, each of the tribes, in the inauguration of the Mishkan, of the Tabernacle, brought various karbanos, various sacrifices. And it's very difficult to understand, but in fact that they brought exactly the same, day after day, why does the Torah need to mention the exact same sentences, the exact same offerings? It would have spared a tremendous amount of words if the Torah would have just written all the names of the leaders and then mentioned thereafterwards that each of them on a separate day brought the exact same sacrifice, namely, and it would list them. Why then does the Torah, in which we've been constantly taught, does not have even an extra letter? Why so much repetition in the end of our parsha? When we study the various offerings that they brought, we clearly see that they spared no expense. They brought a young bull, a ram, a sheep for the olah, for the elevation offering. They brought a he-goat for the chatas, for a sin offering, for the shlamim, for the feast peace offering, 2 cattle, 5 rams, 5 he-goats, 5 sheep. Every nasi, they brought a tremendous amount of offerings, tremendous amount of sacrifices. Not only that, but the Torah tells us that also the vessels, the kelim, were not made out of inexpensive material, but rather the finest of metals. They brought a silver bowl with a weight of 130 shekels, a silver basin of 70 shekels. And they also gave a ladle made out of gold of 10 shekels. We see that the Nesiim cut absolutely no corners. They did not worry about the amount of money that they were giving over. They clearly spared no expense. With that, it's very difficult to understand one area in which seemingly they decided to not be as generous. The Torah tells us, V'yaviu es karbanam lifnei Hashem, that they brought their offering before God, sheish eglos sav, in 6 covered wagons. What was the reason? Why 6? The Torah tells us, al shnei anasim, that there was an agola, a wagon, not for each leader, not for each tribe, but rather an agola al shnei hanasim, meaning that instead of each nasi presenting to the Beit HaMikdash before God their own wagon, they decided to share, to carpool, if you will, and to give not only from themselves, but to split the expense, the burden, down the middle. Why would these Nesiim do such a thing? Why would they choose, after all, giving so much gold and silver and expensive animals, karbanos, why couldn't they simply give a wagon themselves? And on this, the Sforno tells us that the reason why the Nesiim chose to share in the giving of the wagons with a fellow leader, with a fellow member of a different shevet, says the Sfarno, Os Achva Beinehem, in order to show a level of Achva, brotherhood, that they had a love and a care to be able to work, not only among themselves, but also with other Shvatim, with other people who may think and act differently than they do. Says the Sfarno, Asher ba yu oyim shetishra shchina b'nehem. Only when the Jewish people are able to work together for one common purpose and a single goal in mind, will the Shechinah, will Hashem's presence be among us. As he says in the famous Pasuk in Mezos HaBracha, if we want Hashem to act as a melech, to reign over us, Yachad Shiftei Yisrael, the tribes of Israel must be as one. We must be able to have achva, and love and brotherhood for each other. And on this, Rabbi Yisachar Friend explains that this is the symbolism as to why the Torah needs to mention over and over again all of the offerings that are brought. Because as we know in our own lives, we constantly are not only trying to keep up with the Joneses, we're trying to surpass them. We're trying to outdo them, to show that we are better than they are. We see this, unfortunately, in which has almost become a crisis when it comes to chasnas, to weddings. The tremendous amount of money that's wasted. And not only that, when it comes to even bar and bat mitzvot, how everything has to have a theme, and each child is judged by their classmates based on how much money or how good the DJ was. We're constantly comparing ourselves to the next person and trying to outdo the one before. Certainly this also occurs even in ruchnis, in our own spiritual activities. Because one person is from, we try to act holier than thou. I'm firmer than you. I have more chumras than you. I keep and adhere to the Torah even greater and better than you do. And I pat myself on the back because I can feel great that I surpassed you in ruchnis and spirituality. At the time, explains Rabbi Friend, of the inauguration of the Mishkan, which is an opportunity for each shevet to be able to show I'm better than they are. I can outdo the next person. The tremendous chiddush is on day number 2. When the Sano ben Suar from the Nasi, who was the Nasi of Yisachar, decided to give the exact same offerings as was done on the first day by Nachshon ben Aminadav from the tribe of Yehuda. The Sano ben Suar said, I can give the exact same thing because it's not my job to try to outdo and be jealous of what this other person was before. And therefore I have to prove myself and be better than they are. I'm able to do the same because we are all the same. We have achva, we have brotherhood, we have unity, and therefore no room for any form of kinah, of jealousy, one to the next. And therefore we can understand, it is certainly worthwhile every single letter, every word, and every pasuk that the Torah uses over here to teach us this valuable lesson. That even though each of these tribes and their leaders could have brought much, much more, they chose not to outdo the next. They realized the potential of trying to outdo the previous tribe would cause anger and jealousy and animosity among the Shvatim, among the tribes. And how important it is, especially among the Nesiim, among the leaders, to be role models to teach. That we cannot try to constantly outdo the other. Until the point that people who are Bisman HaZeh nowadays, impoverished, but nonetheless feel compelled to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in wasteful simchos, where you could instead give that money to the chassan and kallah for a down payment of a home. But this, unfortunately, is a lesson that we have not internalized from our parsha, the message of the Nesi'im. And therefore, it's worthwhile to repeat again and again and again, pasuk after pasuk, to teach us this message that we should not try to outdo the next person and to show that I'm better than you, because that will only cause anger and jealousy among the Jewish people, and it will cause division and not achva, not achdus, not a connection in unity. On this, Rabbi Fran further explains that there is a symbolism, a greater significance of these wagons that we find in Parshas Vayigash, when Yosef, the viceroy, ultimately reveals himself to his brothers and he gives his father a clue that he is still alive. The Torah tells us, V'yaris ho'agolos asher sholach Yosef lo'aseis oso fatchi ruach Yaakov avihem, that he sent a golos, wagons. And once his father saw those wagons, once Yaakov saw what was before him, he realized, my son Yosef must indeed be alive. How is this proof? So Rashi told us that Simon Masalahem, B'mahoy Osei Kipirish Mimenu, that when Yaakov and Yosef, the last thing that they were studying together were the laws of the Egla Arufa, the laws of a calf that is brought as an offering, as a sacrifice, in the event that there is a homicide in which no one knows who was the one that murdered this individual, that the Torah tells us we must measure to the closest city of where this body is found, that they must bring the Egla Arufa. And the play of words, a golos, and Egla, therefore he brought wagons, and Yaakov was able to figure it out, that in fact his son was still alive. According to the Das HaKeinim, he does not understand what this means. Because if it's true that this was the last thing that he studied, why did he give wagons? He should have brought an animal which is comparable to the Egla Arufa, the actual, the real thing. An animal. That would have been a greater sign for Yaakov to know that his son was alive. And therefore, the Das HaKeinim tells us that the significance of these wagons has nothing to do with the Egla Arufa, but rather, it was coming to hint that one day the B'nai Yisrael will also have wagons in the days of the Nesi'im. And Yaakov, who had the foresight and the nevuah of knowing that ultimately we would have an inauguration of the Mishkan, we would have wagons. And with that connection is the symbolism of these wagons that Yosef sent. But what does this mean? What is this coming to teach? Now this Rabbi Friend explained so eloquently that it's true that Yaakov now knew that his son was alive. But Yaakov also knew the reason why he was sold to Mitzrayim in the first place was because of a lack of achva, a lack of brotherhood among his children. He knew that there was no achdus, and therefore because of this lack of unity, that all the tribes were divided against Yosef, they decided to sell him away to Egypt. And he was afraid that this remained, that there was still not that same level of brotherhood of love between the Shvatim and Yosef. And therefore Yosef explains to Das HaKeinim, Dafka specifically sent their golos. Because as we've studied, that the Nesi'im did not bring a wagon to themselves, but they shared it with another tribe. And as the Sforno said, that was an os achva b'nehem, that showed that they do not have jealousy for one another, but rather they're able to work together as one common unit. And therefore, At that moment, Vatchi Ruach Yaakov Avihem, Yaakov was relieved, not just that his son was alive, but at that moment he realized that there was indeed achva, there was in fact brotherhood among all of his children. It's not typical that Parshas Naso precedes Shavuos. Tomorrow we are going to be celebrating Zman Matan Torah Seinu, the time in which the Torah was revealed to the Jewish people, in which the Torah says, V'yichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar, that we encamped by the mountain, by Har Sinai. And on this, Chazal tell us, what was unique was we were Ish Echad, we were Lev Echad, we were like one heart, we were one body. And just as the right hand is never jealous of the left, and the right hand is not jealous of the left foot, because we all work for one common purpose. The feet move our bodies, and our hands are to do things, and our mouths are to speak, and so on and so forth. No part of our body would ever be jealous. If accidentally your right hand, which was carrying a knife, would cut the left hand, as a form of revenge, would the left hand turn around and cut the right? Of course not. It's silly. And that was the madrega, the level that the Jewish people were on when it came to Har Sinai. We were as one body. And therefore we understood that even though there were different people with different qualities, with different skills and abilities, we were never jealous of them. But we realized that collectively, with all of our different unique strengths, we could come together to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the greatest of ways. In conclusion, may we be zocha this upcoming Shavuos to be able to, as we find the message of the Nesiim, to not have any jealousy among our brothers, but rather to have achva, to be able to show this level of achdus, of unity, throughout. And by doing so, we are bizocha, we will merit the Shechina. By he be Yishur Melech, b'siyasev Rashi'am, yachad, Shittei Yisrael.